welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you with us for our annual gardening gift show. And our guest is Liz Freemuth. She provides concierge horticultural services through her business. It's called The Garden Hole. She has come up with a great list of gardening gift ideas. It's available on our website. And just go to WPR.org/Larry. You can find the program note for this show and click on the related link. So ideas at WPR.org/Larry. What was your favorite gardening tool gift? Do you have a gardening question? Join in with your comments or questions at 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. Love to hear from you. Liz Freemuth, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on again, Larry. It's always such a pleasure.
You've got a great list this year. Is there something on the list that you'd like to receive?
You know, I think top on my list this year, because a lot of the stuff I buy for myself anyway throughout the year, but I did not get a mini chainsaw this year. I will over winter, so if I get that for a holiday gift, that would be awesome. But mini chainsaw really, as we age, makes our lives so much easier for cutting things up.
Yeah, I thought it sounds like a great idea. Now, I have a regular size chainsaw, and one thing I noticed with mine is somebody told me once that, well, if you have a smaller one than yours, the chain itself dulls more quickly because it has to go around more often.
Which makes perfect sense. And the ones that I like are the ones you don't have to mix gas and oil for. So the electric, the battery operated mini chainsaws that have a bit of a chain protector over the top, and they're really made for smaller branches. So, yeah, you are going to run into issues with the chain dulling a little bit faster, but the amount that you can do yourself without having to have help just doubles by using a small chainsaw. It's wonderful.
Well, I think you've convinced me.
You're going to put that one on your list too, right? you know, it is one of those tools that you do have to be very, very careful with. But almost any tools that we gardeners use have got a sharp edge on them somewhere.
Yeah.
So and using some care is really a good idea. This is no different. But, you know, in choosing a mini chainsaw or any other kind of piece of equipment that's going to take a battery, yes, you can go out and get the one that's highly rated or most highly rated, but if that takes a different battery than the other tools that you have, sometimes it's better to sacrifice, okay, maybe it's the second or third best, not the first best, but the battery matches what you have so you can swap them out. Sometimes that's a good approach to take, especially for gardeners that have a lot of battery-operated tools, and you don't have to keep track of all the different batteries and chargers.
Yeah, I've got some eco equipment. I wonder if they make the chainsaw. I have to look that up.
I would almost bet that they would. Either that or they may have an attachment for one of the tools that would act like a, you know, almost like a pruning saw kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which would be good too. But anything that makes it easier for us to get through the pruning tasks or the storm damage tasks, you know, always working within your capabilities and not taking on, like, don't fell a big tree with a mini chainsaw. That's just not going to work. You know, just use some common sense with it. But the other thing that I cannot get enough of are good quality hand digging tools and hand weeding tools. And I have to tell you, year after year, for the last three, I think, Wilcox hand tools have been my go-to. They are so tough, and I have not been able to bend or break one of their tools yet. And they are just absolutely fantastic. They are no frills. They're made in Iowa. Lovely couple. I stopped to visit with them on the way back from Thanksgiving. And they're absolutely lovely, small company, wonderful production. It's they're tools that have been made since the 1940s, 49, 50, somewhere around in there. And they do a really quality job. One that I bought this time was a multi-tool, and I think they call it their multi-crop tool. It has a sharp, really sharp edge on it for cutting sod on one side. The other side has got smaller teeth on it that will act like a soil knife. And then on the end, it has an inverted V so that you can weed with the end of it also. And it's a digging tool. So to me, it's like, oh, my goodness, I can hardly wait to get that thing out in the dark. I'm so looking forward to it.
That sounds wonderful. So Wilcox, and I'm sure they have an online presence.
They do. They are really good about shipping as long as they have the items in stock. They had a couple of new tools. I got a sample of one that we can talk about throughout the year as I play with it. But kind of looks like a mini hand hoe. I'm excited to see what I do with that one too. But they are really quick on shipping. You know, so if you're looking for a holiday gift, they could probably get it to you if they have it in stock. Bully Handled Tools are another company that I have been really impressed with the quality. And by the way, I get no freebies from any of these companies. I mention the tools because I am really hard on tools. And if it's one that will maintain integrity when I'm trying to dig up a tree, then I'm perfectly happy. And Bully, B-U-L-L-Y, is another one of those companies that, as much as I have tried, I've not been able to snap the handle on a shovel. So, I mean, I have been banned from some hardware stores because, you know, they have that free replacement thing. Yeah, I've been banned.
You know, you mentioned we were talking about the little chainsaws, and Vicki in Eau Claire has, I think, a comment about those saws. Let's go there. Mm-hmm. Vicki, hi.
Hi, Larry. Glad to be on your show. For Christmas, I got an early Christmas present this year, a Saker, S-A-K-E-R, 4-inch electric mini chainsaw.
And oh, yeah.
It only weighs a couple of pounds. And it came with two batteries, two chains, a little thing of oil, a carrying case. And it's been marvelous for small limbs, you know, limbing things, and cutting off the little buckthorns.
Oh.
So that's one I'd recommend.
And give us the name again.
Sure. Saker, S as in Sam, A-K-E-R, 4-inch electric mini. And I think it was under $100.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
I love it. Thank you, Vicki. Another one. I hope you have your pencil and paper out. But we have a list, but there are going to be others that you may want to add to Liz's list of garden gifts for 2023, which you can get online, ideas at WPR.org/Larry. Just go there and to today's date, and you'll have it under the comment section, I believe. Chad in central Wisconsin we were talking about trimming, and so he has a trimming question. So let's go there. Hi, Chad.
Good morning, y'all. Great show. Say, I have on the corner of my house, it's got to be 20 feet tall, a burning bush. Never seen one this big. I have neglected it a bit to trim it, and wondering what time of year is best to. I'm going to hack it right in half and then start trimming it. And I have a wish list of I believe it's an Echo hedge trimmer with tilting head and Kung Fu grip. And if your guest speaker wants to buy me that for Christmas, I'd love it.
Okay.
How about if you get me one? I would that. That sounds like a great tool. As far as burning bush goes, you can trim that the same time you would do any of your other winter pruning. So if you do it now, what can happen if we get some warm temps is you might get a little bit of additional growth. I mean, we are a little late but to get a lot of growth, it's going to create damage. But I wait until February or so and pick a nice, dry, kind of warmish day, always the recommendation for winter pruning, and then give it a whack. And you should be good with doing whatever you need to it before the sap starts flowing in spring. So you can hack it back and then start trimming it, and that gives you February and March to get that done.
There you go, Chad. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Kent in Reedstown called to say the 12-inch chainsaw he bought, he doesn't like it because it jumps on the branch and he can't get a clean cut. Well,
right. I think with the 12-inch, you run into that a little bit more than the ones that are smaller. And I think it comes down to balance in the hands.
Yeah.
For that size. And even with the smaller bladed chainsaw, you really do need to be very, very careful in how you handle it. And it might be a two-handed job. And so just be a little cautious with that. But he's absolutely right. Chainsaws can bounce around. So you do need to be careful.
I was looking at your list, and I see you've got sharpening stones on
yep.
your list. What about sharpening? Are they? Do you find them easy to use?
Oh, absolutely. I carry stones in my bag when I'm out working in my tool bag, which, you know, a good tool bag is on the list also. Make sure it has plenty of pockets to put things like sharpening stones in. And I use a regular mechanics tool bag, a nice heavy-duty backpack with lots of little compartments and things like that, so I can store my pruners and my sharpening stones. But yeah, I do, because when you're cutting a lot, it doesn't matter how good the steel is, you are going to get some dulling on that blade. And so I sharpen almost every time I go out to prune, sometimes a couple of times while I'm pruning. Depends on the wood, depends on the tool I'm using, and just really depends on how it feels. As soon as it starts to make it difficult, that tool makes it difficult for you to make that pruning cut, you need to be sharpening it. That's the time when accidents happen or you break tools. So you do need to keep them sharp. And so, yeah, I keep sharpening stones in my bag, and I do actually use sharpening stones. I don't use any of the little things that you run along the edge.
Yeah.
I use a sharpening stone. But that's something that I learned from my grandfather, you know, 1,000 years ago. Dinosaurs were still roaming the earth. But I was taught by somebody who knew how to do metal sharpening. And so if you're not comfortable with it, find somebody who can show you how to do it. And, you know, I keep a couple of different sharpening stones with, so in case I get a burr on the blade, I can take that off and then smooth it over. One of the things you do want to be careful of with sharpening stones is that you don't sharpen too far. You really are, unless you know what you're doing, you need to have those tools done by somebody who is very familiar with metal, how to make it sharp, and then show you how to keep it sharp.
There may be some I'm sure there are some videos online from the companies.
Absolutely.
You get a sharpening stone from a particular company, if you go to their site, and they'll have directions on how to sharpen with that stone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm betting. I'm betting.
Well, I have not been disappointed in what I could find on YouTube yet. So there you go.
What? Now, you've got cattle panels.
Well, I thought that one would catch your eye.
I thought, what the heck? I don't have any cattle.
Cattle panels are a lightweight metal crosshatch, you know, just a vertical and horizontal squares or rectangles. And they bend, and you can make arches out of them to train squash or beans or something like that. Because, you know, something that's heavy and needs some vertical support. You can put tomatoes on them. So they're very long. They're used as fencing, gates, et cetera, for larger animals. And so you can get quite a bit of use out of those by bending them into an arch, putting them either in a bed or just, you know, in the garden, burying those, kind of pounding them into the ground. And, you know, you do have to be a little careful on the bending, but they will bend. Just make sure you've got a couple of people when you're doing that to help hold it down so it doesn't snap back while you're bending it. But that actually will provide an awful lot of support, and it's not horribly inexpensive, but it's not horribly expensive either. And they can be painted if that's something that you, the look you want for your garden, or it can be just the raw metal. But that will serve an awful lot in the garden, and it's a piece that you don't expect to go looking like, you know, in a farm store for, but go do. And really pay attention to how you can make great use of that in the garden.
Liz Freemuth, our guest today, she provides concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Hoe. Questions for her, give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. You can also email us to ideas@wpr.org. We're talking about gift ideas, but we're also taking some regular gardening questions as well as we move along today. Tyler Dinner is our engineer, Jill Dodeau our producer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network and Garden Talk. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here as we talk with Liz Freemuth, gardening guru and gift guru as well, about holiday gift giving and some particularly good gardening gifts, gardening related gifts. And taking some other questions as well. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Before we get back to the gifts, Dean McFarland emailed us. She has is it pothos plant that has been in the same low-light location in her house for many years, been healthy and thriving until this week. She noticed a few days ago that some of the leaves have tiny tears in them, almost like are tears in them, I think, almost like fingernails. In addition to the tears, the leaf stems look like they are peeling. She doesn't have any kids or cats. She can't see any pests. She produced some photos, but I can't. It's hard for me to see, and you may not have access to those.
Jill sent me the photos, and, you know, when I looked at those, the first thing I thought of was cat damage, but she said she doesn't have cats and she doesn't have kids. So it looks like physical damage to me. It doesn't look like anything I've seen on them when I've grown them. What I would suggest she does is to send the photos to Brian as a first stop at the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. And, you know, photos first stop, he might be able to tell her exactly what it is. If he doesn't have an idea, he'll send it over to the insect diagnostic lab. He'll send the pictures over and they may be able to help her. But I couldn't, to me, it did not look like anything that I had seen before.
Yeah, I'm now taking a closer look. I don't remember seeing anything like it.
I know she had asked about using neem oil on it, but I'm one of those that, you know, we have wonderful diagnostic people in the state, and it's so easy to send them a question, a picture, that rather than do the shotgun approach with any type of chemical, whether it's natural or artificial, run it by our diagnosticians and see what it is rather than over-treat when it's not needed. If it's physical damage, that really is picking the leaves off, taking the damage off. And if it's pothos, it grows while you're watching it when it's happy. And so it will rebound beautifully from that. But because I'm not 100% sure, I would say, you know what, don't just trim the leaves off. Send a picture. Let them give you a better read on it than what I can.
Let's go back to gifts for a bit here. Composting goods is another, and I assume you're talking like bins and so forth?
bins, thermometers. Thermometers, a good composting thermometer is one of the best tools you can use for composting. And the reason for that is you really want the temperature up quite high and consistently to kill any diseases and or insects, insect eggs, et cetera, in that compost in order to be assured that you're not going to spread it back out on your soil. And so it looks like a really long meat thermometer, and it really is an instant read. You pop it in, really an oversized meat thermometer. But with compost piles, you want to measure that middle temperature, that inside temperature, and you want it to get up, I think, you know, somewhere, it's kind of like having done meat or food. You want it up about 185, 170 in order to kill everything. And it might be hot around the outside edge, but not so much in the middle. And so if you're noticing that you need to flip it, you need to make sure that it's working all the way through, or maybe you need to cover it to get a little bit more heat in there, that thermometer will tell you where it's at. So very, very good thing.
Jeremy in Manitowoc has something about gifts, I think, maybe for himself or maybe for somebody else. Jeremy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks for taking my comment. But I would say a good high-quality hori-hori knife is a great gift for a gardener, and you can throw away all the cheap little garden spades that break.
The hori-hori knife.
I am so right there with you. The Wilcox tools that we had talked about are some in that category. They have a lot of soil knives. So a hori-hori knife is really, you'll find it listed as soil knife, things like that also. And the handle is key in where the metal goes into that handle so that you're not getting breakage. He's absolutely right. Get yourself a good hand tool and you won't regret it.
Thanks, Jeremy. Appreciate that. What about you? You have a suggestion for us or maybe a gardening question? Give a call. The number's 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Raised beds are on your list.
Oh, yes. And, you know, I'm looking at things and wanting them to be higher because, you know, age. Guess what happened? And if you look at the age of a lot of gardeners, it really is up there. You know, it is a young person's physical activity, yet we continue to do it forever, absolutely forever. So looking at raised beds that you're either going to be sitting and planting in or standing, the elevated raised beds are really quite lovely. And what you have to be concerned about a little bit is the depth of that elevated raised bed. And so when I'm talking about an elevated raised bed, that can either be a very tall, deep planting bed, or it can be a moderately deep planting bed on legs so that it's up at around waist height. So you're not bending over to have to work in those beds. The downside to that is putting tomatoes in there. Now you have to get a stepladder out to harvest them. But, you know, kind of meet yourself halfway. Go out and try a bunch of raised beds. You know, visit trial gardens, visit other people's gardens who have them, and hang around a bit, sit, kneel, see what's comfortable for you. And, you know, if this is for a gardener and not for the garden itself, because I don't know about you, I do give my garden gifts because that's a good reason to go buy myself some good stuff. If you kind of go around and experiment with different ones, you'll see what's going to work for you or for the gardener that you're buying for height-wise and then what you want to get out of it. Distance for raised beds if you're building them. And, you know, an IOU for building someone a raised bed is also an excellent gift idea. But the width, really, you should be able to comfortably stand, bend over, and reach so that you don't have to do some really weird garden yoga maneuvers to get to the interior of the bed. I mean, I've been there, done that, still do it, but if you're building it, you should build it so that it's comfortable for you.
And, you know, as I go around my own neighborhood, I see quite a few little mini greenhouses.
Yep.
And you have that on the list.
Yeah, it is a great season extender on both ends, both the planting end and also the harvest end. And depending on what we get for winter weather and the size of the mini greenhouse and the location, you may be able to grow greens in there for most of the winter. Again, depending on location, size, et cetera. But you can do an awful lot with, you know, $100, $200 mini greenhouse. Or it could be a cold frame, something like that, that you can extend the season out.
Liz Freemuth, our guest, a gift idea or suggestion? What's the favorite gift that you've received garden-related? I hope you'll join in with that or your questions about your own garden. Give a call. The number's 800-642-1234. Email to ideas at WPR.org. You have several book suggestions, and I have a couple of my own, too. So let's talk about yours first.
My go-tos for perennials, woodies, trees, always Alan Armitage and Michael Durr. The information that is in their huge reference-type books, it's not a lot of pictures. We don't need a lot of pictures to get some decent reference. The unfortunate thing about books is, and the authors will tell you this, with information that is cataloging cultivars and anything else that's going on in plant species, is before it's even published, the plant breeders have already made it, some of it obsolete because they've come up with new cultivars. So to me, when I look at these, it's that snapshot point in time. These are the best ones at that point in time. And oftentimes that's enough to really let you see what the conditions are that that plant grows in, what its characteristics are, and then you can kind of winnow it down with new through and work through the new cultivars that are coming out. But those two gentlemen have not been surpassed in the amount of information that they have put out for us gardeners to use and look at. We have phenomenal people in horticulture in Wisconsin that have put out smaller publications, but these are really heavy duty, kind of all encompassing, so that it does run the range of zones in the U.S.
I can't tell you how many times Alan Armitage and Michael Durr's names have come up on Garden Talk over the course of the year. They are really, really good.
They are the guys, and both of them are retired. They were professors at University of Georgia, Athens, and had phenomenal programs there. And Alan has told me a number of times that they were really quite blessed at the time period that they were teaching, that the university kind of ignored them. So they had to do a lot of things that they probably couldn't have gotten away with later on in their professions. And so that was kind of a godsend for us gardeners out there because they have produced just phenomenal, phenomenal information. And they're wonderful people, too. They're both very, very nice. A good propagation book or a good germination book, both of them, are great, and it really depends on what you're looking for as to which one is better or, you know, better suited to what the gardener, whether that's yourself or somebody else, what they want to grow and what they want to germinate. You can find a lot of that information online, but I don't know about the rest of the listeners. I still don't have absolutely phenomenal coverage every place I go. So having a book is great when you don't have the service that's going to allow you to look it up online. Plus, there's some visuals, and I still do like paper books. I admit that. I love paper book. But that will actually give a gardener or yourself a good leg up on how to germinate seeds, how to germinate for annuals, how to split perennials, things like that. So something that covers propagation in some form or another, depending on what your gardener likes, that would be a good gift. I met an author named Marianne and I've got her book on the list too, Tropical Plants and How to Love Them. She does a wonderful job of going through tropical plants that we have in the house and how to keep them happy.
Yeah, Marianne Wilburn.
Yep, and she has got a good voice. Her writing is wonderful. And again, another lovely person, which just adds nice to the mix. I also have Brian's book on there. I don't know if he has it out for sale, but if you have a chance to peruse Brian Huddleston's Plant Pathology Limerick book, it's wonderful.
Limerick Etsy.
Yes, he has got he wrote a fantastic book, and it has limericks associated with plant pathology, and then a short description. And he did everything. He did the artwork. He did the limericks. He did the writing. He did everything, and it is a wonderful showcase of Brian. Quite honestly,
I have a copy, and I love it. It's actually great. And you mentioned Tova Martin books too. Tova's been a guest many times on the show, and she does have some wonderful books.
Yeah, you have fantastic authors, garden authors on, and any of them and their books are a treat to have. Tova has a book for almost everything out there that's weird, unusual, and fun. And, to me, she just is one of those authors that you can pick up, look at what you want to look at, and then think, okay, I'll move on to the next thing. And 2 hours later, you're still sitting there reading her book and to figure out how to make yours look like hers.
Before I give a couple of suggestions, I want to go to Sarah in Waukesha because she's got an idea about her best gift. Hi, Sarah.
Hello. Hi. When my mom passed, her landscapers went and dug out her hibiscus plant and put it at my back door. So I see it every day. Every day when I come in and out of the house, I can talk to it and tell mom hello and look at the blooms. It's gorgeous. Oh. And it's huge. It's like 6 feet tall in the summer.
Oh.
What a wonderful gift they gave to you. That is fantastic.
I love that idea. Sarah, you've got a great, great gift. That's got to be your best gift. I'm sure of that. Thank you so much for calling in with that thought. And as long as we've got callers, let's go to Ann in Madison. Hi, Ann.
Hi, Larry. One of the best gifts is another pair of gardening gloves because they do wear out. Kneeling pads. A nice wide-brimmed hat. And I was wondering if there's anything that can help you get up when you're kneeling on the ground, because I'm old.
Well, you've come to the right place, Ann, because I know that Liz has a few ideas in those areas that you mentioned.
I do. And one thing that has helped me tremendously in getting up from kneeling is to not kneel in the first place. And I do that and actually work in the garden with a little stool that was called a rocker stool. And it has a base that's curved upward and a seat that almost looks like a tractor seat, but is made out of plastic. And it has an adjustable height stem on it so that you can be down low or up a little bit higher. And that has been wonderful, especially if your flexibility is pretty good. And I don't mean perfect. I just mean if you're flexible enough to bend over, because your bum is going to be up, anywhere from a foot to 16 inches, 16, 18, something like that. So if you can sit and bend over and reach the ground and then sit back up, it's something that will work for you very, very well. And what it allows you to do with having that kind of curved up base is you can rock a little bit from side to side, not tremendously so that you're falling over. Although I do have a friend who consistently falls over when she sits on it. I just think that's her. But it does allow you then to sit and stand up as opposed to trying to get up from kneeling. There are also kneelers that have handles on the side that are a little bit taller, and you kneel on the pad in between maybe 6 inches, 4 or 6 inches off the ground, and then you can use those side handles to push yourself back up.
And those are kneeling pads with handles?
It's kind of a kneeling frame that has a pad on it.
Okay. All right.
Yep. And that will help if you need that little bit of stability pushing up with your hands.
What would you just put in? What would you put in a search engine to find one?
I would say kneeler, garden kneeler with handles.
Garden kneeler with handles. All right.
Yeah.
And Ann also mentioned some other things that you have on your list as well. Gloves.
Yep. My favorite for dirty work are goatskin. Goatskin with a little bit of cloth on them. You're going to get wet. We garden. We get wet, we get dirty. But what we don't like to do is to wear our fingers down to nubbins while we're doing it. So goatskin, I found, has washed the best and come back. So you don't want to stick them in the dryer, definitely. But I machine wash my goatskin gloves and then just hang them out to dry, whether that's on a rack, indoor or outdoor, and then just supple them back up in your hands. If you need to oil them up a little bit, you do that. Just take a leather oil and run that on them. But those have held up the best. And you can find them at big box stores, but I go for the goatskin because that seems to hold up the best through washing. So for dirty work, those are great. The other gloves that I absolutely love are foxglove gloves. And if you look up foxglove, put the extra glove on it because otherwise you get lots of flowers, which are pretty, but are not going to get you to the gloves. Foxglove gloves were designed and made by a landscape architect out east. And they are a very stretchy cloth. And so for weeding or for doing minor digging, something that might be potting or something you're not going to run into any gravel or stones with, they work absolutely fantastically. They will get wet, but the cloth really does keep most of the dirt from getting into your hands and onto your hands. And they're machine wash and dry, and so they work beautifully for those of us who really do get dirty all the time. They work great as winter liners also, but I buy the ones that have little dots on them for grip on the palms. And they do have some that go almost up to the elbows or just regular, you know, past the wrist size. But those have been my favorites. And yes, they do get some holes in them. I don't stitch them up. I just use them or trade them off hand to hand, whatever. And those have worked out really well.
Our guest today is Liz Freemuth, and you can join in with your own gift ideas or experiences or maybe a question about what's going on or what did go on in your garden this past year. Number to call 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network and Garden Talk. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're looking at holiday gift giving for the gardener on the show today. And we're also taking some garden questions with our guest, Liz Freemuth. Her business, The Garden Ho, she works all over the country providing concierge horticultural services through her business. So it's great to have Liz back. Again, you can call us 800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. I want to go back to books for just a minute because I had a couple of books. They're not on Liz's list, and so if you want to write them down, you probably should do that. One is by Mark Kurlansky. And I had Mark on the show just recently, and the book title is The Core of an Onion, and it's and the subtitle, Peeling the Rarest Common Food featuring more than 100 recipes, and it is a wonderful history of the onion. And he's a very entertaining writer, and has a James Beard Award-winning author. And it certainly comes through. And I interviewed him just recently, so you could even listen to the interview if you wanted. It's if you haven't didn't hear it. And the title of the book is The Core of an Onion. Not going to tell you much about growing onions, but you probably know how to do it. It does get into it, but not in a step-by-step fashion. It's more history and where we've been with onions and where we're going. The other book I would recommend, and the recommendation is based on a recommendation from two people, Daniel Golden of Boswell Book Company and Margaret Patchett, who is, I'm sorry, Ann Patchett. What did I say, Margaret Patchett? Ann Patchett, who is an author that I bet many of you have read. And the book is The Comfort of Crows, A Backyard Year. The Comfort of Crows, A Backyard Year. It's written by, here's where I got Margaret in there, Margaret Renkel. Margaret's a New York Times opinion writer, is a lovely writer. And The Comfort of Crows is 52 chapters that follow the creatures and plants in her backyard over the course of a year. And it's just this sense of community, setting a theme for the year. We've got, it starts with New Year's Day and a crow that she spied in her backyard area. And it's really well written. I haven't read it yet, but I trust Ann Patchett and Daniel Golden. And we're going to try to get Margaret Henkel on the show to talk about the book because they raved about it. So those are two more books. Let's go to Arlene in New Berlin. Hi, Arlene.
Hi, Larry and your guest. The reason I'm calling is because I heard you on your last, when you were last before the
news break, huh?
Yes, the news break. Years ago, my husband and I were looking for a seat to sit on and a thing to turn it over for gardening. And he had one. It's called by the company Step 2. And I use mine with, I think, 1, 2, 3, 4 pads in it for scrubbing my floors. And it's the best thing in the world. It's not heavy. It's made out of some kind of a plastic, a heavier duty plastic, but you can turn it upside down and you can sit on it. And you can carry it around the yard with you. It's that light. And I just wanted, if anybody was looking for where to go, the company is called Step 2. Now, they may not be out of business. We bought this back in 2004 when we moved into our house out here in New Berlin. But I swear by that because I still like to scrub my floors on my hands and knees. I think that's the only way to scrub your floors. Wood floors are different. But my kitchen floor, I get down on my hands and knees, and I'm 83 years old.
Well, Arlene, while you were talking, I just went online and looked it up, and Step 2 Company is still in business, and there are many, many of different stools that they've got there that I think would fit in the garden as well as for the kitchen floor. Do you know that company, Liz?
I have seen some of their items, and they look like they would be handy. I've not tried them personally. But if Arlene is washing floors with them, they must be working great.
Thanks, Arlene. Appreciate the call. Yeah. Christy in Chippewa Falls will go to you. Hi, Christy.
Hi, Larry and Liz. Thank you. This is a great show, just really great ideas. For the second year, my grandson and I are getting together, and we're going to do winter sowing. So the native seeds have been collected, and he'll come over after school on Tuesday, and we'll use milk jugs and potting soil. And he's really excited about it. We're going to try a newer technique now that he's a little older, with a butterfly weed, inserting a vertical toilet paper cardboard tube to lessen the transplant shock in the spring. But it's a win-win all the way around, and his parents have native plants all around on their landscaping, so it's a great family project, and he can find a gift that he can make at his budget.
Oh, and you're giving the gift of time.
Oh, and getting the gift of time, time with your grandkids around planting. Oh, how perfect is that?
I love that idea, Christy. Thank you so much for calling. A winter sowing of native seeds with the grandchild.
That is absolutely fantastic. I love the fact that she is doing this with younger kids. I don't think I do that enough with my own grandkids. And I should, granted they live a few hours away, so I don't get to see them as often. But what a lovely gift to give to the parents of the grandkid also, time away. You know, get the grandkid away a little bit, give them a few hours, and then you get the joy of really planting seeds with a young one. That's fantastic.
Thank you, Christy. Mark and Bloomer, what have you got for us?
Hey, so I'm a pastor. I moved to town. My next door neighbor saw that I was gardening and I was trying to start composting. And one day she came back from the farm with a 5-gallon pail. She said, "This is my gift to you, neighbor." And I said, "What is it?" And I won't say the word. It starts with the letters S and H. Said, "In this bucket is cow and pig and sheep and horse. You put that in your compost." And by golly, it was the greatest gift this farmer ever received, because I got a great garden that year.
You know, I say that also, and it is on my list, that I don't think I put manure on it this year, but I generally do, because that is such a gift to gardeners. We love incorporating that into our compost. And oftentimes we don't have access to it unless you live near a farm or know somebody who's raising animals, that you know what's going in and coming out of them.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate that very much. Carlin in Genesee, let me go to you. Hi, Carlin.
Hi. Got a question about gardening. So we've got a fledgling prairie patch growing out in our backfield. And now Creeping Charlie it's all in mixed in with my vanilla sweetgrass. It's been around the asters, the echinacea. Is there any hope, or is this going to be just a bust?
Well, Creeping Charlie, on the upside, in Europe, they are breeding it to be more ornamental. That helps you not at all. It's really so, so hard to get rid of. And one of the reasons why it is so hard to get rid of is that every time you pull that, you make more plants, because it's spread by runners underground. So when you break one, you've created probably an opportunity for 4 or 5 more to grow from that underground root. So getting rid of it is kind of difficult. You can go through. What I have found works, not phenomenally, but at least makes me happier as a gardener, is to go in and cut it off a little bit above ground level. And if you do that often enough, it goes into a semi-state of dormancy. But if you have large space, that's next to impossible to do, next to impossible. And so to me, when I look at a spot that has Creeping Charlie in it, I often think, what can I put in that is going to be as tough as Creeping Charlie and will battle head to head with it? And in putting in a prairie, those first 4 or 5 years are really, really important, that those seeds have a chance to maximize what they can get out of the soil before they start combating things like Creeping Charlie or turf grass, et cetera. And so unless you have something that is really, really
tough and can go head to head with it. And dig around, you will probably find some natives, you know, and I'd go to Prairie Nursery and see if they have something that might compete with Creeping Charlie. But catching it early, and if you are going to pull it and try and eradicate it, you're going to have to stay after that on a weekly basis because it does grow that quickly. So while I wouldn't say cash it in on that one, I would just say gird your loins, get out there and see what you can do with it. Again, pulling, you're going to get more, but if you keep at it again and again and again, you can get a modicum of control on that. The only other thing you could do would be to try and chemically treat it, but you're still going to be battling. And Creeping Charlie is really the bane of a lot of gardeners' existence, unfortunately. But I wouldn't give up. I'd get out there. And if you catch it early, you might be able to keep it under control until those plants get big enough and tough enough to battle the Creeping Charlie on their own.
Good luck with that, Carlin. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Our guest today, Liz Freemuth. She provides concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Hoe. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Great to have you along for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We have our annual gardening gift suggestion show going on now, and our gift guru, Liz Freemuth, who provides concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Hoe. So, questions for her, I hope you'll join in. Could be about a gift or maybe a favorite gift that you got or one that you'd like to recommend, or maybe you just have a gardening question of some sort. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. Jan emailed and wanted us to look at the what is called Gardener's Kneeler Bench. Gardener's Kneeler Bench. The one she has pouches for tools as well. It flips from a bench to a kneeler and makes getting up so much easier, and somewhere in that $40 to $50 range in terms of prices. Do you know Gardener's Kneeler Bench?
Yep. Yeah, and all of these work really, really well to help somebody get up or get down. You know, often we talk about getting up, but sometimes getting down to a kneeling position is tougher depending on what's going on with the muscles and the joints, et cetera. So having those handles on the side can help people lower and then also raise. So, yep.
Good idea. Well, let's go back to your list. You did mention speaking of tools, you mentioned a tool bag, and you mentioned it kind of earlier, and a real tool bag is what you think we need.
I do. You know, we sometimes go for something that's a little frou-frou-y because gardening can be seen as, you know, just something we go out and do. But for a lot of us, having those tools and not knowing exactly which tools have to be with us at every point in time. It's nice to have a real tool bag with separators for the tools so that the edges aren't knocking together. That can really impact their sharpness over time. Also, the ability of you to grab a tool without cutting your hand on something else that's in there. So the ones that I like are made for tools, for wrenches and sockets and things like that. But they make wonderful, wonderful backpack tool bags. Go to your hardware store or go one Wisconsin company I like that has, well, there's many I love, but one that has a good online presence and a good supply of materials, tools, tool bags, et cetera, is Gempler's. Gempler's. They're out of Wisconsin. Great company. And otherwise, you know, go to a big box store. There, if you're like many shoppers and you wait until 2 days before Christmas, you don't have the online option most of the time. So don't overlook the local hardware stores, the local garden centers, et cetera, for that unusual kind of tool bag or you know, we talked about sharpening stones. Those can be gotten in many, many places. But check local. I'm a local shopper anyway. I have a local store. So, you know, I love the local shopping. But, yes, a good solid tool bag that has separating pockets for, you know, and you can fit your pruners and all of that kind of thing in. It's fantastic.
You know, what I gave last year to a couple of people as a gift was the Baker Seeds catalog.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A wonderful reference.
It's and you could give that every year to the same person because it's always changing and there's always lots of good stories in it.
You know, they do a wonderful job. And I know that he's been a guest on your show. Always fascinating to listen to and to read the catalog, and the stories behind it are wonderful, absolutely wonderful. And that most of us gardeners like paging through a seed catalog. There's just something satisfying about that.
Well, and his is a thick, I mean, I don't remember how many pages, but
a lot of books.
Yeah, it's a book. Yeah, it really is with lots of great photos of the plants you're going to get from those seeds.
Yeah, and you know, that is a wonderful, wonderful resource. Another one that I saw recently that I thought was great in their mission was Turtle Tree Seeds. They work with a special population of those that may have differing needs. And they work in the gardens, they do seed harvesting, things like that, and it's a biodynamic organic. And that's difficult to find in a seed catalog, so that is an interesting one to check into. May not have as many cultivars as one would like, but in the biodynamic organic land, that's not really what it's about often anyway.
Yeah. What's the name of it?
Turtle Tree Seeds. They're out of New York.
All right.
And it's a great mission. Go, you know, take a look at it. They've been around for quite some time. You know, locally, Wisconsin, Jung's has great information and catalogs, local. And Prairie Nursery, now's the time to really be looking and seeing what you want to plan out for next year. So great, great, great local companies.
Rita, who is heading to Minnesota, will go to you. Hi, Rita.
Well, good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
My question has to do with raised garden beds and raising tomatoes. I found out after years of living with black walnuts that tomatoes don't do well in the ground. Well, the black walnut trees are now gone, but and I have raised garden beds, but I still have difficulty in getting the tomatoes to not be 12 feet tall and spindly and produce not very much fruit. And so I don't know what to do differently.
What type of tomatoes are you growing? Determinate or indeterminate?
Indeterminate. You know, I always try to have a cherry or a very sweet tomato, and then I try for a meaty and aroma, and then just a good old slicer. So I'm alone, so I don't need to have a lot of tomatoes, but I just love a fresh tomato.
Sure.
And such.
Right.
So
right. And one of the tough things about jug loan that is in the soil is it doesn't really go anywhere. Even though those walnuts, the trees themselves are gone and you don't have the wash off the leaves, et cetera, if those raised beds have got contact with the underlying soil, they can still be pulling some of that jug loan up out and going into the system of the plant. And so you may want to look at something that is more of an elevated raised bed so that it's up off of the ground completely and totally. And that way you can actually control where those roots are and what they're taking up. If you, again, that's if you have contact. And then go for varieties that don't naturally get tall. So look for some of the newer shrubby, maybe patio container plants. They are doing a lot of good breeding on those that are going to be resistant to late blight and all kinds of other good issues that hit tomatoes and be contained in a little bit smaller space. But I think minimizing what those roots are touching is going to help out quite a bit.
Good luck, Rita. Thank you so much. Rose in Toma, we'll go to you. Hi, Rose.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to give a shout out to our Wisconsin Cobra Head Company. I find it's just the best tool you can possibly use. It's a hoe sort of a thing. It comes in a short-handled one and a long-handled one, and a great company and a great tool. So if you're looking for a great gift, that would be it.
All right. Rose, thanks. And you've talked about cobra heads before, I believe, Liz.
Yep. Yep. They're great tools.
Thank you so much, Rose. Appreciate it. Cool name, too. Cobra head. Which
it's very descriptive of what it looks like. So they did a great job with that.
Oh, boy. Marge in Waterloo. Hi. Waterloo, Iowa, I'll bet. Or maybe Waterloo, Wisconsin.
Yes, and I had some health problems earlier when it was time to plant gardens, so I could not get anything planted in my garden. But I have some grow boxes, which I had purchased earlier, and I've got 6 plants of Wisconsin 55 tomatoes. And I used those grow boxes, 3 plants in each grow box. And you have to keep them well watered, though. That's the thing. You have to water them pretty much every day. And there's a well underneath that you can pour the water into. And then they just, you know, get it from there. And I'm still eating tomatoes from those grow boxes because when it got cold, I pushed them into the garage. And they've still been ripening very nicely. So.
What a great way to enjoy that.
Oh, yeah, and she was able to wheel them into the garage, which is also a nice thing.
Yeah, that is absolutely fantastic.
Marge, thank you. Appreciate it. Roger in Grantsburg, hi.
Hello, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Meg, I got a couple of ideas here, a few ideas. People want to make raised beds. One feller, I fixed tractor tires, and one feller stopped in here and he wanted to get the old back tires off of tractors. He took and laid them down. He said he had back surgery and he loved gardening, but he couldn't bend over, bend over and that. So he took the tractor tires and he filled them up with dirt and he used them for planting his garden above, stacked like too high, so he could just stand there and then do his gardening, you know. And he painted them green so they kind of blended in. They didn't look like big old nasty old tractors how you're laying there in your yard, you know. They work out just great. I got rid of, I bet you four or five dozen of them things, you know. They work great. You can find them usually for free. You got to pay to get rid of them, and all people got them laying around. Every farm has old tires.
You know? Roger, thank you. He's right about every farm having old tires, or most, I'd say not maybe every, but many, let's put it that way.
Right, right. And, you know, it's so good to keep things out of a landfill.
Yeah.
Give them another use.
Thank you, Roger. Appreciate the call. I'm looking at some other things on your list here. which we haven't run out of topics yet. That's for sure.
No, no. Gardeners never run out of topics. I've learned that over the years.
Well, you've got some that are, well, I mean, I don't know, massage, manicure, pedicure. One of the things about gardening is you get your finger a lot of dirt under your fingernails if you're like me and forget about your gloves.
Exactly. And, you know, bending over and lifting while you're bent over and not in the best possible position and, you know, the abuse that we heap on our hands and our feet, it is a real treat to go in and get a massage that is going to take all the knots out that you put in. And so it really is a wonderful gift for anybody who does a lot of physical work. Find somebody who's really good at massaging the knots out and give that to a gardener you like, or even one you don't, and they will like you by the time you're done with the massage. But yeah, can't beat that.
You are absolutely right. And then you've got some good skincare products. What are you recommending there?
Well, heavy sunscreen. A hat is kind, in my world, it's kind of a given. But sometimes when it's super windy, you can't keep the hat on your head. And so making sure that you have got a good quality sunscreen on every single day is really, really worth it. You know, melanoma can hit no matter how much sun you get. And so covering as well as you can is absolutely fantastic. But then also, if you think about it, when you're outside on a windy day with the soil blowing around, that's like sandpaper on your skin. So getting somebody a good moisturizer, a good cleanser to get the junk off is really a wonderful, you know, I appreciate you kind of gift.
I like that as well. That reminds me, how you have a little side business going. I was reluctant to ask, but explain that side system a little bit.
My side business, which was supposed to be a kind of a retirement idea. Of course, gardeners never retire. We just die in clients' yards. I hope they realize that. I've had many of my clients say, when are you going to retire? It's like, I won't, but you may find me dead in your yard. But I thought it was a good idea to, during COVID, to think about opening a store that has new, used, vintage kind of fun stuff in. I hesitated putting gardening items in at first, but this next year I will be adding garden items into it. So, yes, I have things from Turkey. I have friends from all over, you know, many years of gardening. I've made contact and made friends with so many lovely people. And I've tried in this store to incorporate those wonderful people and those they are attached to. So hand-woven Turkish towels and items that may have seen the dumpster or the dump have come in, and they're lovely, they're beautiful. You know, I've got repurposed tables. I have all kinds of goodies in here from all over. And it's really been just kind of a labor of love and fun. What it has done to my life is early in the morning, I go out and do hoe work. Then I come work at the store. And then oftentimes at night, I'm in meetings. So, yeah, it's a retirement. Oh, I don't think so.
Now people are going to say, well, what's the name of her store?
The name of the store, in keeping with the whole theme, I'm sure people will hear in this, the name of the store is Strumpet and Tart. And it's in a little tiny village of East Troy in southeast Wisconsin. And it's a lovely village. There's an old square that has wonderful businesses around it, a bookstore that is just defies all goodness. I mean, you know, it is the best bookstore I have seen in a long, long time. And cafe and, you know, lovely things, wine store. There's all kinds of things in this town. And in December, and in fact, this weekend, there's a little electric trolley that runs through, and Santa is coming into town on the trolley, and they
hops on a fire truck. We're talking lovely small town here. If he hops on a fire truck and goes around the square and all the lights light up and lights are done to music. And so, yeah, you wander about and just have a great time in this little tiny village.
And what's the name of the village again?
Village is East Troy.
East Troy. Mm-hmm. And those towels are really good.
They are fantastic. Yeah.
They're really good towels.
I know. Once you use them, you don't want to go back to something else. They are absolutely fantastic. And I'm going to do a slight promo because, you know, you opened the door on this one. I'm open Thursdays and Fridays from now until Christmas until 8 o'clock at night. And people, if they come in at from 5 to 8, they get 20% off of towels and then the hand-woven baskets I've got from Madagascar, those as well. So there you go.
Okay.
And you might even get a beverage. Hard to say.
What about socks? Because you have socks listed as a gift.
Yeah. A good pair of natural fiber socks for anybody, whether they're a gardener or not. But when you get sweaty, disgusting feet as much as gardeners do, a good natural fiber sock is going to go a long way in foot health. And a nice washable wool sock is fantastic for the feet. And oftentimes we think wool is going to make your feet hot, but they act as a good insulator, so they'll keep it hot and cool. But having a good natural fiber sock is really fantastic on the feet.
And we haven't gotten through the whole list, but here in the last minute or so, we've got one thing that might cost a little more, if you want to spend a little more money, and that's design services.
Design services, and then also on the list is a large tree. You know, as we all get older, planting a tree you always do for the next generation or a generation after that. But if you're impatient and you want a little bit extra oomph, planting a larger tree, and there are good quality larger tree movers out there, that might be something to look for. But design services, too, are underrated sometimes by gardeners. And we all run into a mental block of what should we plant where and how do I make all of these plants that I love and I brought home, how do we make them make sense in the landscape? And sometimes just paying for a couple hours of design service, you know, and you can find that often at local garden centers, or you may even check with your extension office to see if they have a master gardener that likes to dabble in design, you know, anything to really get that kind of roadblock out of the way for a gardener.
My neighbors who just moved in recently, or this last summer, actually got a designer in because there was a pretty large front area with all kinds of plants, and they didn't know what the heck they were. And that person came in and said what they've got and got rid of the weeds that were in there at the same time.
So. Fantastic, right? Absolutely fantastic. It saved them probably 2 years of banging their head against a wall.
Absolutely. And it was just, you know, a couple of hours, and there it was. Mm-hmm. Well, here we are, out of time, Liz. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. We'll look forward to your next visit next year sometime. Hopefully next year soon. Thanks, Liz.
Thank you so much, and happy holidays to everyone.
Yeah, to you as well. Liz Freemuth, her business, The Garden Hoe. And let's see, what have we got coming up? We got all kinds of things coming up, which I've forgotten. Monday we'll take, Mary Mellum is back to talk about your income taxes for 2023 and answer your tax questions. Have yourselves a great weekend, and thank you so much for listening, but please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.